Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody, and put another feather in the cap of the public health mayor. The New York City Health Department has announced that teenage pregnancy has declined by 27% in the last 10 years. Less pregnancy and less teen sex. But disparities by race and borough remain significant, and the announcement has engendered a backlash over giving teens contraceptives, including the so-called morning after pill, without parental consent. New York City Health Commissioner Thomas Farley is here. Commissioner, thanks so much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Teen pregnancy down 27% over 10 years. How much was there? How much is there?
We had a big decline in teen pregnancies, over 27%. It used to be 99 teen pregnancies per 1,000 teenage females, and now we're down to 72. And in just the last 2 years of when we measured it, from 2008 to 2010, we were down 12%. So if anything, the fall is accelerating. And it's due to a couple things. Once teens are delaying sex, fewer teens are sexually active than were before, and those who are sexually active are much more likely to use contraception.
How different was the progress by borough and by race or ethnicity?
Well, teen pregnancy rates are far higher in African Americans and Hispanics than they are in whites, about four or five times higher. And it's fallen, though, in all of those groups. So that the disparities remain, but still we're seeing progress in all groups and in all boroughs.
Fallen by similar percentages?
Yeah, by similar percentages in all the boroughs, by similar percentages in all racial groups.
I read a stat that the Bronx still has the highest teen pregnancy rate of any county in the United States. Do you know if that's true?
I don't know if that's true. It's certainly high for New York City, and I it wouldn't surprise me. Certainly the Bronx has lots of poverty, and certainly they have African-American and Hispanic groups are more heavily concentrated in the Bronx, and they're the ones that have the highest teen pregnancy rates. We've been working hard in the Bronx, and we're making a lot of progress there.
Listeners, anything you want to say or ask about the reduction in teen pregnancy in New York City over the last 10 years, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for the New York City Health Commissioner, Thomas Farley. Maybe you work in a pregnancy prevention program in a high school and you happen to be listening right now. Maybe you're a teen or somebody in your 20s who has had contact with one of the prevention programs and think it actually helped you or anyone. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or maybe you're one of the people who objects to the way contraceptives has been used. And before we get to that particular controversy, how much do you see the reduction in teen pregnancy as a success of city policy, specific policies, and how much as something that would have happened anyway because culture is changing?
You know, it's really hard to say. Teen pregnancy rates are falling across the country, but they appear to be falling farther and faster here in New York City than across the rest of the country. The other information we have is very positive. Again, that we're seeing here reductions in kids who are sexually active and high use of contraception amongst those who are sexually active. And those are the things that we've been working on very specifically.
But my question is, how much did the city do this as opposed to kids just sort of deciding to use more contraception or deciding to be less sexually active at an early age?
Well, it's tough for kids to decide to be use contraceptives if they don't have access to contraceptives. And so we've worked hard to make them more accessible to kids by making our clinics in the community more teen-friendly, by making contraceptives available in school-based clinics, and by providing information to kids on how to access those services. So we certainly feel that what we've done has contributed to the decline a lot.
Is it also related to the sex education in the New York City public schools, including emphasizing abstinence at a young age is the best prevention?
We certainly think our kids ought to be educated, and so, yes, we have made sex education available throughout the New York City school system. And it really emphasizes that sex is risky and encourages kids to not be sexually active at all as the safest way to avoid pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases. But it also gives them information on how to avoid those risks if they are sexually active.
Where did condom distribution, the Plan B morning after pill, and other access to birth control directly to teens from the city come in?
You know, we've had we're promoting condom use across the entire population. As you know, we have our own New York City branded condom, and condoms are also available in high school in a resource room where kids, if they have parental permission, can go in there and get information. And services are available in the community and in schools. So we're really trying to get the information out across any opportunity we can, and also those services available so that all kids can use it. And I understand that some people worry that when you make contraceptives available, somehow teens get the wrong message and it makes them more sexually active. If what we've seen is just the opposite, that kids are less sexually active. So we think that kids are getting the message that sex is risky.
The New York Post says they did a Freedom of Information Act request and learned that the city's public schools distributed many more morning after pills than the city first acknowledged. Do you acknowledge that?
No, they're mixing up two different stories. We've had contraceptives of various sorts available through school-based health centers for years, and that's something that's been, you know, widely known to parents. It's on parent consent forms. And the Post just sort of learned of that, even though it's been widely known for a long time. And then separated that out from the separate program that we've done in the last couple of years where we made contraceptives available in schools even that don't have school-based health centers. That's called our CATCH program. And they got those two mixed up. But the point is we've been making contraceptives available in schools for a long time.
Just reading from the Post article that ran over the weekend, last September, the city revealed it had started giving out Plan B and other birth controls in the nurses' offices in 13 high schools. At the time, officials said 567 girls had gotten Plan B. But the birth control blitz was much bigger than the city acknowledged. About 40 separate school-based health centers doled out 12,000-plus doses of Plan B in 2011-2012, up from 10,000-something the previous year and 5,000-something in 2009-2010, according to the newly released data. How accurate?
Again, they're mixing up two stories, so they're inaccurate there. We were asked how many students had gotten Plan B in the CATCH program, which was this program that was where there were not school-based health centers, and we gave them that information. But we were also very open at the time that we've been offering those services through school-based health centers for years, and that there are a large number of students who had received those services for years.
So if it's 12,000 doses of the morning after pill under any program, they quote a woman who's president of the New York City Parents Union, who has a 14-year-old at a Manhattan high school, who says, "I'm in shock. What gives the mayor the right to decide without adequate notice to give our children drugs that will impact their bodies and their psyches?" What would you say?
Well, first of all, in the CATCH program, where it wasn't in school-based health centers, all parents had the opportunity to opt out of that program. And we had a very small percentage of parents that did it. It was less than 5%. And second of all, in clinics across the city and clinics across the state, minors are allowed to get reproductive health services on their own. Well, they don't need to get parental consent. That's New York state law. And so those clinics are simply following New York state law. Now, I can understand that she may not like that, but that is the law. When parents had the opportunity to opt out of the program, a very small percentage of them did. Parents in general want their kids to have access to these services if they're sexually active.
New York City Health Commissioner Dr. Thomas Farley on the 27% reduction in teen pregnancy in the city over the last 10 years. You know, it's funny, since this pushback is taking place in the context of this success in reducing teen pregnancy, do you see the backlash as no good deed goes unpunished?
You know, I don't see pushback. I see, you know, maybe one angry story in the New York Post. But in general, I think parents are very supportive of it, as measured by the opt-out rates. And I think everybody would see this as good news. I mean, what's bad news here? We have fewer kids are sexually active. That's a good thing. Those that are sexually active are using contraception. That's a good thing. And teen pregnancy rates are down substantially. That's a great thing.
212-433-WNYC and Lewis on Staten Island. You're on the air. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. Great show. I'm a big fan, long-time listener.
Thank you.
My comment is regarding what you just mentioned about that article with about that woman who was the president, I believe, of the Parents Association, you stated?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. The thing is, you know, it's kind of hypocritical for me because in that article it also said it was another way of controlling the Black and Latino population. And it did state that, and I'm offended by that as being a Hispanic myself.
Well, it's not about controlling the Black and Latino population. It's about helping prevent unwanted teenage pregnancies.
And it's but on the one hand, the communities of color, they ask for help in these situations. But on the other hand, when the help is given, it's like it's, you know, everybody's yelling and screaming. And also you have to take into consideration, and a lot of Latino communities and countries, it is a cultural issue as well. Some countries, you know, they have the cultural issues. They have children at very young ages. There's a lot of, you know, teenage pregnancies. It's very widely accepted in certain countries.
And I think in, you know, developing countries and in this country in an earlier developmental era, it was more accepted and more common. Dr. Frawley, how would you address Lewis? Or maybe the question in there is really, why is the teenage pregnancy rate more stubbornly high among Black and Latino teens and lower income teens?
Yeah, I don't think we fully know the answer to that. Teen pregnancy rates tend to be lower in lower-income populations. I don't fully understand that either. But I certainly think that we want to make all the services available to those kids so that they don't become pregnant. We certainly want everybody to finish high school. We want kids to be able to go to college. And we certainly know that it interferes with that if you have a child. And we also know that when teenagers get pregnant, for the most part, these pregnancies are unintended and unwanted. And so this is the sort of thing that they are looking for.
If there are disparate rates in different communities, then wouldn't it take some kind of culturally sensitive or culturally specific kinds of programs to attack those problems?
Yeah, you know, it does. And we have education, again, that we do in schools throughout the city. And they're put together with a lot of thought about cultural sensitivity. And, again, the message is the basic biologic effects are the same, those basic issues. And the basic message is that the best way to avoid getting pregnant is not to have sex in the first place, but contraception. That's true no matter who you are. But then it's got to be cultural sensitivity in terms of the way that those are delivered.
Matt in Port Washington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matt.
Hi, I just wanted to I don't generally like to say that MTV performs much of a public service, but I happen to think that the popularity of 16 and Pregnant, which then became Teen Mom, and the fact that they've had two series of it, and the fact that it's continued and made sort of celebrities out of these moms has showed how deeply unglamorous it is to be a teen mom, and that while I don't know if they put it out on the air initially to perform a sort of public service, I believe that it's actually had a deep impact on young women in terms of discouraging them from getting pregnant at a young age.
Are you familiar with MTV's Teen Mom, Commissioner?
I'm not, but I certainly think that in general, messages coming out through the general media are more open and honest in the past about things like teen pregnancy. And I think the more information our teens can get, the better, that they understand, you know, what the risks of getting pregnant, the difficulties of raising a child, and they understand what they can do to try to prevent that. I think all that information is a good thing.
Karen in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I just was curious when your guest said that there are a fewer number of teens that are having sex, and I thought, well, that's a little strange. But I'm wondering if any part of that would be empowering young women to just to say no, because I think there's a lot of pressure on young girls to have sex. I don't think anybody goes into that saying, oh, gee, I want to get pregnant. But I think that the problem might arise is when, you know, they feel pressure to have sex.
Dr. Farley?
I do think that peer pressure is a big problem. I do think that kids somehow feel that they haven't made the grade yet, that they're not mature yet, unless they're sexually active. But the good news is that that's changing. So back in 2001, 51% of New York City high school students said that they had had sex. In 2011, it was 38%. So that's a big decline in the last 10 years. It's something that you know, we're very pleased with.
What do you attribute it to?
You know, it's hard to say. I certainly think that the information we get out there that says that sex is risky, that you can get sexually transmitted diseases, you can get HIV, you can get pregnant, I think that information certainly makes kids pause a little bit. There may be other things that are going on in the home with better communication with parents or with people having smaller family. Maybe teens are a little closer to their parents, and that's a good thing.
If teen sexual activity rates are going down in recent years, does that bend a curve that had been going up for a few decades?
You know, it's. I think there's been a decline in general in this country over the last 10 to 20, well, I'll say 20 years. But I don't really know, I haven't seen the data farther back than that to know what has been the long-term historical trends. I certainly view this as a good thing.
Tony in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hi, Brian. I just wanted to say that I have a 17-year-old daughter, and I really want to commend the New York City Public Schools for what I look at as like a very proactive way of informing the kids of information regarding, what sexual activity means and all the, inherent dangers and risks and, you know, and the positives and everything else with that. And, you know, we've always talked very openly with my daughter about, sexual issues. And the feedback I get from her is that, you know, almost every issue we bring up, and, you know, it's been discussed in depth in her, in her middle school and in her high school. And I just think that, you know, it's a wonderful success. And, obviously the numbers are relaying that. And the last thing I want to say is I always appreciate the way you balance your program and, you know, bringing up the New York Post article. But I would just like to say that I'm sure you could ask, like, a Taliban representative what he thinks of this program, and the response would probably be about the same. It's just this kind of very conservative criticism of any kind of progressive program that works.
Would you be upset if your 17-year-old daughter's public high school gave her the morning-after pill, not a condom, but the morning-after pill, without you being notified?
Well, obviously... in the relationship with my daughter, I would not be upset because she's a very mature person. I do not speak for, obviously, all other parents who may have issues with that, and I can see where that would be a problem, for a lot of families. But as far as our family is concerned, no.
Tony, thank you. And, in fact, Dr. Farley, these new city numbers come just as some religious organizations are continuing to resist a compromise with President Obama over universal birth control coverage in Obamacare, even if the religious organization doesn't pay for it. As a matter of public health, do you think that's a recipe for more unwanted pregnancy among adults in the name of religion?
Well, I would just simply say that if we want people to not have pregnancies that they don't want to have, if we don't have unintended pregnancies, we're going to have contraception available, and I think that that's part of basic medical care. I think adults should have that access, and I think teens should have that access. And I have to just say to thank the caller for giving that firsthand report with his daughter. And let me just say, I've got four daughters myself, and I, talk to my daughters, but I wouldn't say that I've always been as informative as I should be, and I appreciate when they have information available to them through school and other sources to give them all the depth that they want to help them avoid getting pregnant.
We just have a minute left, and I'd like to touch on one unrelated thing, and that is public health after Sandy. At the 100-day mark, have you seen measurable effects of any kind on public health in New York City?
No, we certainly know that there were difficulties right around the time of the storm. But we are tracking the health through things like visits to hospital emergency departments and other health issues. And in general, things are back down to what they were pre-Sandy. Now, again, there are some families who are really struggling with their loss of their homes and disruptions. And we know that there will be people who are suffering mental health consequences of that. But in general, overall, physical health, we're pretty much back to where we were.
Is the health department involved in mold remediation or in preventing or measuring mold-related illness from the water-damaged homes?
We do track things like asthma exacerbations that in people with that problem that come into hospital emergency departments. And we're giving guidance to people of all sorts who are remediating mold in their homes. And as you know, the city has now a program to help homeowners get the mold out of their homes. It's the sort of thing that you do in the process of the ordinary reconstruction of a flooded home. It's very doable, but people need guidance as to how to do it, and we're providing that guidance.
But as far as the mold-related illnesses, no measurable increase in reporting?
No, we're not seeing an increase in asthma, which would be the most common problem that you would expect from that. We're not seeing increases in that would be make us concerned that the mold is really causing an increase.
Okay. Dr. Thomas Farley, the New York City Health Commissioner, we always appreciate you coming on and talking with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the president of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Thomas King. He may sue over Governor Cuomo's new gun laws. Stay with us.